Welcome to the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Today on the Baseball America College Podcast, we've got Arizona head coach Jay Johnson. And Jay is here to talk about the Wildcats going into the 2019 season, wrapping up a 2018 campaign that was a little disappointing for Arizona, missing the postseason. Probably one of the first teams out of the field of 64, but they're going to be looking to get that corrected here as we go into 2019. And they've just gotten their fall ball campaign started. And they started in kind of a unique fashion with the Mexican Baseball Fiesta there in Tucson. And what that is that there are some professional teams from Mexico that come up and play in Tucson. And the Wildcats were able to play one of those pro teams. And that was actually on their first day of team fall ball activities. They started their fall ball, with a challenging opponent there, and we'll see how they progress through the rest of their fall. But it's good to get that going right away. Find out exactly what you've got right from the jump, and especially true, I suppose, when you have as many young players as Arizona does this year. It was a strong recruiting class coming in, ranked number 13 in the nation, especially heavy on the pitching side for Arizona this year. They brought in a number of arms that they're going to now rely on over the next few years as they kind of revamp their pitching staff to be able to go out and compete in the Pac-12 and chase that regional bid and try and get back to Omaha, where of course they last were in 2016, Jay Johnson's first year in Arizona, when they finished as a national runner-up to Coastal Carolina. So plenty going on in the Arizona program, and Jay will get to a lot of that here. So we'll just get right to this interview here with Arizona head coach Jay Johnson. Today on the Baseball America College Podcast, like I mentioned, we have Arizona coach Jay Johnson. Jay, welcome to the show today.
Awesome, Teddy. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, it's fun time here. You guys are getting started with fall ball. It's hard to believe we're in the middle of October already, but you guys got things started here. Really kicked things off with a game against Naranjeros de Hermosillo of the Mexican Pacific League in the Vamos a Tucson Mexican Baseball Fiesta. Can you just kind of explain what that tournament is all about there in Tucson?
Yeah, it was a great experience, and the Mexican Baseball Fiesta came to us last year and wanted to include us. We're a big part of the community, obviously, here, and it's a great event. I mean, they were running, 5,000 to 6,000 people in the stands per game, and so we got to play the opening night against, the best team in the event, which had a bunch of pro players, ex-big leaguers, AA and AAA guys. It was great to put the uniforms on for our freshmen and first-year players to get in that type of atmosphere. Really, the first day of practice was a great opportunity. We saw a lot of good things and gave us a good springboard into what we want to do in the fall.
You ran out a lot of players in that game, which finished 2-2. I know you weren't concerned about the score at this stage of the fall, but I mean, just what did you see that you liked or that you wanted to improve on as the fall continues now?
Yeah, I think the best takeaway was the length of the pitching. We threw 9 players, and 8 of them were new pitchers, 1 inning apiece. And of the 9 guys, 8 of them were over 90 miles an hour at some point in the inning. And so I think the depth and the arm strength that we were able to bring in with this new class was great to see. I think it was great to see their mental disposition be able to slow the game down and really fill up the strike zone, and they only gave up 4 hits the entire night, which was very impressive. And on the position player side, taking at bats against pro pitchers, thought we held our own pretty well. We I think we had 9 or 10 hits and didn't really look overmatched, overwhelmed, did not chase out of the zone. And the game definitely exceeded my expectations for where we are in the development of our team, and I think that's a credit to some of the talent of our players.
Now, one of the players on Naranjeros was Salazar, your former catcher. I mean, just what was that like competing against him?
Well, it was my first game at Arizona without him as our catcher, so it was a little bit odd. Cesar was a great player for us and just did a tremendous job. And very happy for him being a good pick by the Astros last year, and is playing in the Pro League down in Mexico this winter. And he's on his way, and his value to us was tremendous. And we're real proud of him, and definitely a little bit odd experience having him in the opposite dugout, that's for sure.
No doubt. So I guess this game was, you used it as the international game that the NCAA
Correct.
Allows. Yeah, so I mean, what do you get out of, when you play some of these teams from other countries, they have different styles of play. In this case, they're an older group. I mean, just what does that kind of bring to the table for you?
Well, I think there was a lot of positives. I mean, how often do you, in a college baseball setting, do you get to play in front of 5,000 people? You know, especially in October. And so we get those types of crowds here in Tucson, and so I thought it was a tremendous learning experience for our players to be able to deal with, you know, that type of environment, which, you know, we'll see later in the year and be that much more prepared for it, hopefully. I think when you look at the quality of the competition was very strong, and I think it mimicked a lot of what we see in the Pac-12 with, you know, professional players. I mean, there was a couple guys, you know, from Hermosillo that were 94 to 97. All of them could throw a breaking ball for a strike. They were matching up, bringing lefties out of the bullpen. So it was a really good challenge at this point. And I think just setting a foundation for competition, getting to play in a close game. I mean, we were ahead 2-1 late in the game, and learning how to operate in those types of environments, and really to do it without having practiced or trained as a team until the day of the game. I think it was great, you know, and we'll get 3 or 4 good weeks in, and then we'll play Cal State Fullerton and then BYU a little later in the fall. So we're really looking forward to those opportunities also.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me that, you know, just kind of examining how everyone handles fall ball in different parts of the country, and where you are, of course, you can start later because you can play later. I mean, do you like that aspect of it, being able to get the kids in school and acclimated and doing individual work for a while before you get into the team fall practice?
Yeah, 100%. And we started strength and conditioning the very first day of school. I mean, this morning we actually lifted for the 29th time this semester already. So we got them going pretty fast in regards to that and the individual work and those types of things. I think the later start benefits us tremendously, and it allows the pitchers to, you know, either let them rest their arm a little bit coming off of the summer, or reboot their arm if they took the summer off and get 6 to 7 weeks of quality throwing program in before they ever step on the mound. So that's probably the best benefit of it. And then the other benefits of having a little lighter schedule, you know, getting adjusted to college life and those types of things. And I think the best one is that we don't have as much time between when we finish our competitive fall segment to the start of the regular season. And so the foundational pieces that you put in as far as teaching and development, you know, aren't as far away than if you had to start earlier.
You mentioned the recruits that you have coming in, the big recruiting class this year that we ranked number 13th overall in the country, and you got guys like Austin Wells and Bryce Collins and, you know, some exciting arms like Randy Abshire and George Arias Jr. And, I mean, just when you look at this group, I mean, what stands out to you about this class?
Yeah, I mean, I think we had a 3 full years to recruit them, and so I think the quality of it is as good as we've had since we've been at Arizona, and, you know, very excited about it. And it, for us, you know, the improvement, you know, needs to be on the mound and the pitching staff. And I referenced, you know, 8 of the 9 guys were at 90 or better at some point in that Hermosillo game. And, you know, a couple of those young freshmen, I mean, Bryce Collins, George Arias, you know, it was only an inning, but, you know, flashed 3 or 4 pitches. You know, Collins was 92 to 94. Arias was 91 to 93. You know, both, you know, struck 2 guys out in the game of their 3 outs that they got. Randy Abshire, you know, big arm with a lot of upside, a lot of potential, you know, was really throwing the ball well. And then mixing in a few transfers as well. You know, Andrew Nardi, left-hander, really looked electric. Nate Brown, transfer from Florida, threw the ball really well, was really down in the zone with 3 pitches for strikes. and Vince Vanell. So I think it's a deep recruiting class, and particularly on the pitching side, which, you know, we want to really build a staff that, you know, creates a lot of problems for people, and they're all different, and they're all coming at you, and they're all tough to hit, fill up the strike zone. And then on the position player side, it was great, you know, getting Austin Wells 4 at-bats, Brandon Beausier 4 at-bats, Ryan Holgate 4 at-bats, you know, against that caliber of pitching right off the bat was really positive. So we're excited about these guys, and now we're working extremely hard to develop them to be the best players they can be.
I mean, it's interesting as you guys set about kind of rebuilding this pitching staff after a lot of guys have moved on, graduation, pro ball. Your pitching philosophy, just in general, I mean, you oftentimes don't have set roles the last all season long, or you oftentimes are looking just to play matchups, and you like to have guys who are very versatile on the mound. Can you just kind of explain where you're coming from with your pitching philosophy?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. Number one, you know, we're going to treat every game like it's the Super Bowl, and we want to win every time we step on the field, and we want to put pitchers in the best position to be successful. And sometimes, you know, they're in college for a reason. You know, there's something missing. Otherwise, they, you know, would be a first or second round pick. So setting them up for success, you know, is really where the matchup thing comes in. I think, secondly, it gives more players a chance to make a positive contribution to the team, and that can improve your team dynamic when you're doing that. You're using more guys, so that's very valuable as well. And, you know, in all reality, I think we have some guys that could, you know, emerge into, you know, guys that you say, hey, we're going to run this guy out every Friday or every Saturday for the course of a season. And if we can do that, by all means, we want to do that. I just don't know that we've had the types of guys to, you know, compete at the top of the Pac-12 to be able to do that. So we had to find a different way. We did that. And, you know, but if a couple of them want to emerge and, you know, be unhittable 3 times through the lineup and then hand it to a setup guy and a closer, I'm all for that. So hopefully we can move in maybe a little more conventional direction.
I mean, I like that you mentioned the Super Bowl mentality there. That, I mean, the one thing I noticed when you guys were making the run to the World Series Finals in 2016 was just the various motivation techniques that you have, and that's one of them, that you get them to your players to buy in that every game is a Super Bowl, and after every win you guys take a picture so that you guys, you know, remember the win, and no one win, you know, every win matters. And I mean, just where do you come up with some of this stuff, and where does some of that stuff originate from?
Well, the motivation behind it first is college baseball is a very fickle game, and we look at it like a 56-game playoff. I mean, in all 3 years here, in 16 and 17, we were probably one win away from hosting a regional, which we all know what a significant advantage that is. And then last year, probably a win away from, you know, being in the NCAA tournament. So our players know the value of them, and so you cannot afford to have a let-up or, you know, not bring your best. And then just for survival, you know, in the Pac-12 with the type of quality players that are in the conference, the type of quality coaches that are in the conference. So, you know, motivation is just the baseline for survival. As far as where it came from, you know, I've had some good mentors. My dad was a really good high school football coach, and I think was ahead of his time with some of that stuff. And then, you know, I spent 8 years with Rich Hill at San Diego, who was really good at that. You know, really trying to get players, you know, to really compete and to really, you know, be consistent, you know, on the attitude and concentration and effort they bring. You know, you can't do that just by rolling the balls out. So whatever way we can get them engaged and locked in on being the best they can, we want to try to do that.
And your teams generally are pretty loose in the dugout, and that might be an understatement. I mean, the whole country kind of saw that, I guess, during the World Series, but I mean, you've got guys who just are having fun playing the game. And how much do you just want to let them run with that stuff, or do you ever try to rein them in at all? What are your thoughts on your dugout?
Well, yeah, I get asked about that a lot. You know, I coach third base, and you know, whenever we're in the third base dugout, my back's to the dugout, and I'm totally engaged in trying to help us score runs. So. I don't notice a lot of this stuff till after the fact. But, you know, I think, you know, we want to respect the game. We want to respect, you know, what everybody's doing and those types of things. With that being said, I want them to want to be on a baseball field more than they want to be anywhere else in life. And so part of that is just letting them be themselves and, you know, being able to play free and uninhibited and that type of thing. And so some of that comes out. Now, we've had a couple of those players that were what you would call the ringleaders of that deal move on. So it'll be interesting to see what type of personality this team takes on. But really, it's more of, hey, we're gonna recruit really good players and let them be themselves. As long as they're totally engaged and competitive, we're not going to nitpick at every little thing that they do.
Yeah, I mean, I personally love it. And I just think that, you know, these are college kids having college kids, like they're just enjoying their college experience. And if part of that spills over into the dugout or they shoot music videos, like I just think that's awesome.
Well, I was a PE major and I have very little artistic talent or creative thought in regards to anything but baseball, so I'm not taking credit for any of that. So.
Do you have a favorite video that Sawyer Gieske shot when he was there?
You know what? He was a talented guy and I thought they were all good. And you know, in a lot of ways, and the way kids are nowadays with social media and constantly on their phone and on the internet, you know, any way that you can promote your program is a positive. And, you know, we're thankful that Sawyer had some talent to do that and did a really nice job with that as he did. So all good on our end with that stuff.
Well, you mentioned how you felt like you guys maybe were just a win away from the NCAA tournament last year. And I mean, you certainly were one of the first teams out of the tournament, it seemed like. And I mean, it just seemed like that team maybe on the road couldn't get things going into a sort of a groove. I mean, just what do you have as you look to 19, what are you looking for this team to take a step forward to get back to the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting season because it was one when you finished up, you didn't feel like a failure. And what I mean by that is we were 20-6 in non-conference games. Our non-conference RPI was 11, and we won 6 of our 10 Pac-12 series. And so on the surface, I felt like we were an NCAA tournament team. And it would be very easy, though, to sit back and go, we're fine, and that, this and that. And instead, I give our players a lot of credit. We basically have just, you know, taken a hard look at everything we could do a little bit better in terms of, you know, self-discipline, fundamentals, all those types of things that will, you know, put us over the top. And so far, we've had a great start to this year. And, you know, a lot of new players, but, you know, they're very much getting integrated into a culture of hard work and toughness and fundamentals. And you mentioned the road thing that hopefully the decisions they're making on a daily basis and their commitment to the right things will put us where we need to be. And there's no excuses about that's what we want to do. And the action, you know, on a daily basis is being taken to improve us in every phase. And right now, I don't know if that leads to any type of different results, but we're putting forth the effort to make sure we're on the right side of that.
You talk about how there are some new faces, but there are also some pretty solid returning players, guys like Cameron Cannon and Nick Quintana. And, you know, Cannon kind of had a breakout summer in some respects in Cape Cod, you know, and seems to be a guy that's garnering interest as we look to the 2019 draft. I mean, he's a guy that is pretty versatile in the infield. Just what are you looking for from Cameron this spring?
Yeah, he's a baseball player and really talented. And we were lucky, you know, he was one of those guys that did not commit to a school early. So when we got to Arizona, we still had the opportunity to recruit him and sign him. And boy, we're sure glad we did. And I always look at Cam as a really balanced player. I mean, he has really good feet at short. He has above average hands. He has a really strong arm. So it has all the makings of a really good, you know, whatever you want to call it, top 25 or power five shortstop. As far as the pro game, you know, maybe the second baseman, maybe the third baseman. I'll let somebody else decide that. I think he brings good versatility there where he could probably be a plus defender at all four infield spots. And then the hitting thing, he has enough power and bat speed and baseball aptitude to really hit enough to play any of the four infield positions. And we're just looking for that slight improvement. I believe he was an honorable mention All-Pac-12 player last year, which, you know, he probably could have been an All-Pac-12 player. I don't know how that always breaks out, but I think he's got all the ability in the world. I think he could be a future major league player, and has really, really improved, you know, in his time here. And if the jump from the sophomore year to the junior year is as big as the one from the freshman to the sophomore year, that'll be great for our team and great for Cam. And he just loves baseball, and I love coaching players that love baseball.
I mean, that certainly makes things easier. I mean, like you said, you want guys that want to be out of the field more than anything else. And so if you can get guys like that, I guess that's at least half the battle, it feels like.
Yeah, no doubt. And you mentioned Nick Quintana, and he's the same way. I mean, I'll be here at night, and, you know, we've had a long day, and I'll peek out my window, somebody's walking over to the Terry Francona hitting facility, and it's Nick Quintana. So those guys have been great, you know, and we mentioned, you know, wanting to take a step forward in everything that we do, and they've done a great job leading the charge in that. And whatever organization drafts both those guys, they're getting good players, but they're getting really quality human beings also.
I like that name drop of the Terry Francona hitting facility that just opened like a year ago now, I guess, and Terry gave $1 million. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite baseball team quickly transitioned to the Cleveland Indians when that happened. I'll tell you that much. He's awesome. What a great guy, and we're proud of his success. And just what they've done with that organization since he's been there is remarkable. I had a tough loss with the Astros yesterday, but another championship, another great season. And, you know, I'm sure it's a little sooner than he wanted, but we're looking forward to seeing him back in Tucson here this offseason.
Awesome. Well, you also mentioned much earlier now about just the atmosphere in Tucson, and you guys have a great college atmosphere, and especially at the baseball games. I mean, just what's that like playing in front of the Tucson crowd all spring long?
Well, first and foremost, it's a tremendous home field advantage. You know, we've been really successful over 3 years at home. Somebody told me not that long ago that we're 70-20 at home over the last 3 years, and that's playing a really highly competitive schedule when you have half the Pac-12 games, you know, at home. And I think it's for a number of reasons, but, you know, we averaged around, I can't remember, it was 3,300 or 3,800 a game last year, which is always the top in the West. And it's a high buzz, high energy environment. We have a beautiful ballpark. And what I've noticed most about being here in Tucson is our fan base is extremely loyal, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, good times, bad times, they show up, and they're behind you, and they're always encouraging you and telling you you're doing a good job. And it makes it a really special place to coach and really special place to play, because that doesn't exist in very many places across the country in college baseball, and we're lucky to have that at Arizona.
Absolutely. Well, Jay, before I get you out of here, I just want to get your thoughts on the playoffs. I know that's an exciting time. You mentioned the Indians being out. That's my hometown team. So unfortunate that they were eliminated already. But, I mean, just what do you like about watching the MLB playoffs every fall?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it's a great learning opportunity for our players because, you know, we mentioned the college baseball season being condensed in like a 56-game playoff, where we feel like every time we take the field, we're in a playoff game. And so the fundamentals, the things that might not be noticed in a major league regular season baseball game get magnified in these playoffs. So first and foremost, we use, you know, every day, you know, a teaching opportunity from something that happened in a playoff game. And I think this year, I think it's a unique deal where, you know, you probably have the five best teams left for sure in terms of talent and rosters, and, you know, I don't know how it all breaks out on payroll, but I think it's going to be great these last couple weeks. You know, I certainly don't have a dog in the fight, but I think it should be great to see how it unfolds, and you know, lucky for us, it's good learning opportunities for our players.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be watching that, and we'll be looking forward to seeing Arizona back on the diamond in the spring. Thank you so much, Jay, for joining us here on the Baseball America College Podcast today.
You got it, Teddy. Talk to you soon.
Thank you again to Arizona head coach Jay Johnson. You know, I just think it's such an interesting way that they started fall ball. You know, what with that game against the Mexican team in the two, you know, there in their home park. You know, kind of just a great way to get started in your fall season, and it's a fun connection having Cesar Salazar come back too. And it was interesting that Jay said that was his first game at Arizona without Cesar behind the plate. And, you know, he was such an integral part of that team, you know, right from the jump, coming in as a freshman and being able to catch for the Wildcats and catch for that, especially that team, you know, the national runner-up team. You know, so now the Arizona's trying to find some new guys to take them back there. And, you know, like Jay mentioned, there's a strong freshman group there, and they were able to see some of those arms in action, which is important for them. And, you know, Arizona is just a fascinating program, I think, to watch going into this year. They've got guys, you know, like we mentioned with Cameron Cannon and Nick Quintana, who can be some draft prospects guys, and they have these young players coming in, and it's going to be a hungry program, having missed the field of 64 last year. So as they transition kind of into this new core and try and get back into Pac-12 contention, they're going to be a team to watch this spring, and I think they can be in line for a pretty good year as long as they can get that pitching lined up. And you know, that's one thing that Arizona typically has done pretty well under Jay and pitching coach Dave Lawn, is they usually at the end of the day they find a way to get the most out of the pitchers they have on staff. So we'll look to see how they do that this season. And of course, they've definitely been, you know, very offensive. They play to the park pretty well, and you know, it's a bigger park. It's a former big league spring training site. So they know what they got to do to win in Tucson, and they're usually pretty good at it. So, you know, this year, if they we'll see how they pull it all together, but. You know, I think the Wildcats can be in a pretty dangerous team again this season as the Pac-12 kind of looks like it might be a little more open. You know, you've got Oregon State coming off of those two incredible seasons, of course, but with Pat Casey retiring and, you know, the core of Larnick, Grenier, and Madrigal all moving on to pro ball, having been drafted in the top 40 picks. You know, maybe they're not going to be. Maybe they still will be the juggernaut of the conference. But at the same time, you know, there is a lot of turnover to be had there in Corvallis and some of these other teams in the Pac-12, be it UCLA or Arizona or maybe Cal with Andrew Vaughn coming back to lead the way. You know, there's Stanford, of course, as well, still going to be strong. Maybe there's some room at the top of the conference now for some of these other teams. Of course, Stanford did win the conference last year. They edged Oregon State and Washington, but Oregon State ultimately wins the title. So exciting times on the West Coast, and Arizona figures to be at the forefront of that for, you know, the foreseeable future with Jay Johnson leading that program. It's obviously, like Jay mentioned, a very committed fan base, a very committed community, and the program traditionally, of course, exceptionally strong, and we're going to look for that to continue. And I'll be excited to see the Wildcats this spring and see what they've got, see some of these young kids and what some of these returning players are able to do as they get into their junior and sophomore seasons. So, again, thank you to Jay for joining us here today to talk about Arizona baseball on the Baseball America College Podcast. And, you know, all fall we're having these weekly college podcasts, doing interviews with some of the exciting people around the game. You know, today that was Jay Johnson. Next week, we've got Mississippi State center fielder Jake Mangum coming on, and so that'll be exciting. So, if you're enjoying these podcasts or our daily MLB playoff podcasts throughout this month as well, if you're enjoying those, make sure you're subscribed here to the Baseball America podcast. And you know, if you're enjoying it, we'd love to hear from you in a review or just rate the podcast there. And you know, let us know why you're enjoying it, and you know, we love to hear from our listeners. So let me know there, or let me know on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill, and remember to go over to baseballamerica.com. We've got plenty of content there. The league top 20s are wrapping up, and Pretty soon we'll be into the organizational top 10s, top 10 prospects, and all 30 teams in baseball rolling out over the next few months here. Of course, leading up to the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, which you can pre-order at shop.baseballamerica.com. You can also pre-order the Baseball America Almanac and a new book that we're putting out this year, the Before They Were Stars, which is a look at, I believe there are 125 players in there, big league stars, looking at them before they made it to the big league. So we're diving into the Baseball America archives for that, and there's some great players in there like Derek Jeter, Francisco Lindor, very big names in the sport of baseball over the last 25 years, I believe it is, and just taking a look looking back at their scouting reports, and just from what I've seen of the book, it's pretty exciting, to look at what the report was on a guy like Andrew Jones, what it was like when he was coming through the minor league system. So if you're a Baseball America fan, I think you'll probably enjoy that book. So you can check that out on shop.baseballamerica.com and head on over to the site to find all of the rest of the great Baseball America content that you're used to over there. So remember to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done so already, and to check out baseballamerica.com, and we'll see you here next week. Thanks for listening.